Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Morelia Python Radio. Tonight we have on Anthony Caponetto. It's going to be a good show. Anthony has some really, really cool carpet pythons. And I think when I first got into carpet pythons, I remember checking out Bullwinkle on his site and being blown away. So looking forward to the show. What's going on, Owen?
Nothing much. Just kind of getting everything back in order here at home base. After the Hamburg Reptile Show this afternoon, I did run into a few listeners and a few people from the forums, which I apologize because I've already forgotten your names.
So,
I love it when people come up to me and they know everything about me. And I am trying to set up my table, so they're like talking to me like they're old friends, but I'm not paying attention. I feel terrible later because I'm like, oh crap! They just waited 2 more minutes. So I would have had time to sit and talk, and oh darn it! So I apologize to anybody, and please come back and hang out at this table next time.
Okay, fair enough.
Bad timing.
Yeah, I saw you at Hamburg today. That was a pretty crowded show there.
It was very crowded. From what I hear, there was a line forming around the block until about 12:30.
I showed up there. You know, I had to park all the way down at the other end of the lot, and then I had to walk all the way down, and then I had to stand out there for about 20 minutes in the freezing cold, to get in. So,
I don't know. I showed up early. There were plenty of parking spots, and I got in with my vendor pass, but The other thing I wanted to bring up is that there was some vandalism done to my car at the Hamburg show.
No kidding.
Yeah, there was. I came out after the show to get my car, and someone had put this sticker on my side view mirror, and it said, Redding Reptile Breeders, Howard Redding.
Oh, no.
Big sticker right in my side view mirror. I'm like, oh, no. And the thing is that he went outside, and the person who went with him was Jason Balin. So the two of them may have been involved in this. So
I don't know.
Jason kind of split out of there before I could question him. He was gone before I figured it out, and Howard had left a while ago. So I'm just saying, game's on now. It's over. Retaliation will be mine. So
fair enough. they're trying to hold the market on the banana.
Might have been that Jason had a banana.
Trying to take you out.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
But at Hamburg today, you did come by my table and you brought some good goodies with you. your patternless Tanner bars you brought by the table.
Yeah.
And those were, they almost did not leave. So.
Yeah, yeah. Really, I finally got to pick them up. Yeah, so
yeah,
pretty excited
about
that.
Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I mean, I can't wait for you to start making those, because I'll probably grab a pair from you for that. Those, they look very cool. Big bug eyes. It was weird. So, I think
Dave is one of the only – they're not the easiest to breed. You know, of course, you know, we've had different people on here talking about scrubs and stuff, and apparently they're probably the easiest besides the Barnecks, or maybe the ones that have been done the most, but you know, hopefully I have some success.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm still new to the scrub world, me and my little two Maloukins, and thinking I'm a badass. But but that is definitely very cool. And I have I was bad myself at the Hamburg show today. So
what did you,
you
get?
Know, I got myself a male zebra, so I have ventured into jungle even further, which is scary now. So now it's like, I'm like, okay, zebra time. Now I got to figure out what to do with you. So in my head, I'm like, what would go well? Jungle check. No, it's a heart. No, it's a mix. What am I doing? So,
oh, no. That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah,
I'm conflicting
myself. Yeah. Like, I imagine, like, I'll breed it in secret, but then the second the eggs hit the ground, I imagine you just, like, bursting through a door being like, aha, I told you. So,
who's Dr. Frankenstein now, right?
Dying now, yeah. If I do it, I have to, like, make sure you can't find out. I mean, it's completely in secret. Like, what's the zebra up to? Nothing. So.
Very good. You're going to want caramel zebras, too. I'm telling you.
No, that's too far. They look
well,
pretty.
The same
I have
thing.
A caramel. Stop it.
I mean, if you're breeding it to a jack.
Stop it. I know what you're doing. I know it, because I'm looking. I'm like, I have the caramels. And now I have the zebra. So, I mean, no.
I saw a lot of cool things at Hamburg. Like I said, it was pretty crowded. Pretty happening time. You know, the one thing I wanted to hit on real quick. You know, I'm walking around the show, and this is a pet peeve of mine. And I guess people, maybe they can take my advice from a customer's point of view.
Strollers? I hate the strollers.
No, not the strollers.
Okay.
But, you know, I hear people say they can't sell their snakes and all this stuff. And they're sitting with their arms folded behind their table. I mean, you're about to sell somebody, a couple $100 snake. At least stand up and try to interact with people. You know,
oh, yeah.
So I was happy to see that... Rogue Reptiles, Jason Balin, Howard Redding, all standing up, getting involved with the people as they walked up. So that was cool. But then I seen other guys that just could have cared less.
You know, those are the people who don't make the sales. I mean, like Howard touched on when we had him on before with the engaging people and talking to them. I was getting, you know, towards the end I kind of get tired and then I'll start sitting down. But then I just find a way, by the way, to engage the public is I actually just take a snake out. You know, you take out one little baby zebra or jag or whatever, and you let it just run through your fingers. People are just going to come over and want to look at it, especially if it's a good-looking one. So you can just figure stuff out like that. There's always a way to engage the public because you're right. You do have to talk to them. And I had to – there were a few today that spent more time at my table discussing stuff. Then they kind of went away for a little bit, and then they come back buy the animal. So I mean, like, between the time they actually spent purchasing at my table and the time they actually spent discussing stuff, they spent more time just sitting there talking to me about the snakes than they ever did of just coming up and buying it.
Right.
So it is very important to get out there and talk to people. And I actually had to help out a few people who were a little lost on carpets they already had at home. So
to
help some people out, even, you know, just to, because clearly they need some help there. So
very cool.
Yep.
How's the season going?
Caramel female had her prelay shed yesterday.
Okay.
Which is a wonderful sight to see. So now we're counting down, and I'm like, okay, cool. We have that prelay, and then I turn around and my high con female is blue. I'm like, uh oh. So we're gonna have two clutches at the same time. then my big girl Sophie is blue. I'm like, oh, crap, we're going to have two clutches and a monster clutch at the same time.
Oh,
and now the red Tigers are locked. I'm like, okay, we're 500 all cylinders. Then the Jags locked with the red, with the lesser Tiger girl. I'm like, oh, I may have gone overboard here. So then the caramel male's breeding, and the granite spotted better lay her eggs, or I'm going to freak out soon.
Oh, she still didn't lay.
No!
No.
I don't know what's going on.
Wow.
You know when like you're at that point now where you're like, okay, you're going to start really contradicting yourself and be like, all right, she's obviously not gravid. This would be the time when she lays. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, we're done. It's not happening. I remove the lay box, and then I go upstairs, come down, there's eggs. I'm like,
eggs.
This is what's going to happen. I know it's what's going to happen.
Right.
Then I have cow kings and corns. It's way too many freaking eggs over here, or soon to be. I'm going to be drowning in eggs.
Yep. Which isn't a bad thing.
No, it's not. I'm not complaining. I'm just stating.
Yeah.
How is your how's your IJ doing, the maternal?
Good. We should see hatchlings popping out of the eggs. Should be sometime next week.
You'll be freaking out. You'll be freaking out.
Actually, the mail came from Anthony Caponetto. It was a GQ outcross. I didn't purchase it originally from Anthony. Luke did, but so that's pretty cool. And
awesome.
Pretty excited to see those babies. So.
Very
so that
cool.
Should be cool. The zebra tiger jag, or the zebra jag to red tiger, she should be laying probably Monday, I think. And then I have the diamond coastal jag sib that came from, actually I traced it back, and it goes back to Erin Boulay and her MBB line of coastals. So That should be pretty cool to see what the zebra jag
awesome.
Does with that. So, can you imagine a zebra jag with that red?
No, it's gonna be weird.
I think it's gonna be pretty cool, but I don't know. And
yeah.
I don't know what the red tigers are gonna do to the zebra pattern. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Could be good. Could be bad. Yeah.
Organize it into little striped patterns of craziness.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Couple things before we bring Anthony on that I wanted to hit on real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, on the Facebook page, we put up a page. It's called Moralia Pick of the Week. And,
and it's
basically
blown up. Oh, my God.
Cool.
My Facebook feed is just filled with carpet python pictures. I'm not complaining and just stating, but oh, my God.
Yeah. The whole idea was just to, you know, sort of have a place where everybody could post their favorite pictures of their different Moralia that they keep.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully the people that are, you know, maybe catch the show or are, you know, they catch one of the guests that are come on, and then they can go over and go to the Facebook page and see all the different types of carpet pythons and chondros and scrubs and, you know, how cool they can be. So I think what we were going to do going forward, though, is pick a category, because what I noticed is that
it's all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just people posting like crazy, which is cool. I'm not complaining about
that. But there's no semblance of order. So we're kind of, I believe picking a category and then maybe us picking what we really like out of the certain category per week would be awesome.
Yep.
So everybody out there must now fight each other for our love. And, for our amusement is what we're getting to. So have at it, people.
Yeah, so what I did, I picked out a couple that stood out to me because I promised people that I would give them a shout-out on the show. But the I think the carpets, Greg Hines, I guess I'm saying, I hope I'm saying his name right. I think he goes by Greg 2011 on Moralia Python. But anyway, he has reduced pattern diamonds. There,
I saw those.
Yeah, they're nice.
They were fantastic, yeah.
And then the chondros, a guy named Barry Manson. I'm not sure. As the info that I've seen on there was Mr. Black to one of Rico Walder's Blue Pepper.
Really?
Pretty cool. It's got like red.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of really cool ones on there, and especially with the chondros and the carpet pythons. It was some really cool stuff. Even Australian pictures were showing up. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, what that is. So
yeah,
it's definitely very cool to see what everybody's doing and everybody's talking about. It's also very nice that, some of our former guests have thrown pictures up there so you can see what maybe we were talking about when we talked about some of their snakes. So.
Yep, that was the other page that I started, and that's only open to the guests of Morelia Python, the people that come on the show. What they can do, though, is they can only post, but everybody can look at
it. Everybody else can see.
Hopefully, going forward, when we have the guest on, they'll have time if they want to throw up some pictures of snakes they want to talk about, or that way it's right there, everybody can see it, and I think everybody has Facebook, so
at this point.
Yeah.
See, the funny part is I can probably post on the guests of the Morelia Python show. You can't, because you're the host.
Yeah, I know.
You were never a guest.
Damn it. I didn't think that one through.
God, I failed. Why did I do that?
So Barry's actually going to be coming on the show. I haven't nailed down a date with him, but he's going to be coming on because I checked out his website, and he has some pretty awesome chondros. So I'm looking forward
awesome.
To that. And then the only other one that this is right up your alley, Sarah Sternberg. She posted up her rough scale python, which was pretty cool.
Oh, God, I love rough scales.
Yeah.
I so want a pair. It's ridiculous. Every time we mention it now, I really have to just go on this tangent of how I really must love them. Maybe if I complain enough, somebody out there will just send me a pair.
I don't think so.
I doubt it.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. No. They don't love me that much. Anyway.
Yeah.
So,
the other thing,
very cool to see those things.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about at the beginning of the show, just to get everybody... Mm-hmm. We're getting closer and closer to the 2012 Northeastern Carpet Fest. That's going to be on May 12th, and it's in Waldorf, Maryland. So if anybody's interested, please email me at moreliapythonradio@gmail.com. We're hoping to have the total headcount by the end of March. We're looking to... If anybody's interested in bringing food or, drinks or whatever, Morelia Python Radio is going to be supplying the keg. And I'm going to try to get an idea. I'll post it up, I guess, sometime this week of take a vote on what it should be, I guess. What do you vote for?
Hell if I know. I'd end up just going with like a lager kind of Yingling kind of deal, but I'm going to be made fun of now for that from somebody. I know. It's already exploding over on the forums.
Beer. Come on.
But hey.
And of course, we're going to have the auction. So if anybody wants to donate animals or items, if there's anything, T-shirts, any stuff like that. Somebody was going to... be making some hide boxes and stuff like that so that we can auction them off. We're going to be doing that live on the air so that everybody can hear. And all the proceeds, we're going to US ARC. And I want to make sure that every time we mention this that I give a special shout-out to Howard Redding from Redding Reptile Breeders because he is the host. So
vandalize my car, you jerk. Anyway.
And we did get a shout-out on I don't know if anybody's seen this, but it's pretty cool, actually. I went over and checked it out. It's called The Reptile Report.
That's Chad Brown?
Yep, Chad Brown and Robin at Pro Exotics. And basically what it is each day their staff goes through and checks more than 80 reptile and amphibian sites, and they post the most interesting news and discussions in the reptile world.
Awesome.
So you can go over to www.thereptilereport.com and you can see what's going on. They have a little section for Morelia, and we were at the top of it for the Carpet Python Fest, so I thought that was pretty cool. So
we're that cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I think that's pretty much all I have for right now. If you want to bring Anthony on?
Let's bring him on. Let's get Anthony on here.
Okay, let's click him on here.
Hello.
Hey, Anthony, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good. How are you?
Very good.
Doing all right, Anthony. Thanks for coming on with us and, talking to some carpet python.
I guess we're just
going to roll into what we normally do, and that's get some backstory on you and figure out, what got you into reptiles, Anthony?
Just ever since I was a kid. The house I grew up in when I was little, we had a creek that ran just behind our backyard, and ever since I was old enough to play outside, I was out there, and I was usually down at that creek catching anything I could, crawdads, frogs, toads, found a few ringnuts down there. That was what really got me, like my initial spark in this, with my interest in snakes. But ever since then, and then I didn't get to keep any snakes at home until I was like 13, 14.
Okay. And what was your first snake?
Corn snake, a mean one.
Corn snake?
I bought it at the mall, and it bit me before we even got out of the
store.
But and then I got a ball python and a boa not too long after that. But I got to keep like lizards and toads and frogs and fish and all kinds of stuff when I was a kid. But my mom wasn't going for the rodents for a long time. So that's how it started.
Okay. Now, what brought you to carpet pythons?
When I was just graduating high school, I got rid of what snakes I did have, got rid of everything really, and then did the college thing. And then when I was working for Gateway, I got back into snakes finally. First I got a couple of chameleons, but then what I had always wanted was carpet pythons. Back in the mid-90s, there was really nothing out there. I mean, jungles were $300 a piece, and I couldn't afford that in high school. So, but anyway, once I was out working, I had a little money, and I decided to get into carpets, and I got the Eerie and Jaya's were the first ones I got. And it was actually the GQ pair were the first pair of carpets I owned, the original GQ line, the pair that started that whole bloodline.
Wow.
Yeah, lucky grab.
Yeah,
I knew they looked different, but it was lucky, for sure.
Cool.
But, I'd always wanted carpets, and for years had to just wait.
Just, I bide your time.
I made up for it. So.
Awesome. Well, can you tell us a little bit about AC Reptiles, which is your company? As well as maybe give us an overview of what you got in your collection, some of the highlights that you got going on over there.
When I was working for Gateway, is when I really started breeding stuff and having stuff to sell on the website. And I never really meant for it to be a business, but that's just kind of how it ended up. I was probably making as much money doing reptiles as I did working for Gateway for a couple of years there at the end. And even when I left Gateway, I thought I was going to get into computers, doing something else with computers, and the reptiles would be a sideline thing, but they just took off. I mean, that was back in 2005, I guess. So, it all happened really quick after that. We do obviously do a lot more than just carpets. We do a lot of crested geckos. I think we produced somewhere around 6,000 of them last year, 2011.
Wow.
And those have been the last thing I would have thought, would make money, but they're just extremely popular.
Huh.
And, and I could probably sell more if I had them, but I think we're about out of space. But,
have you had many people that start with a crested gecko and then jump over to carpet pythons or vice versa?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
A lot of that, yeah. See a lot of that, see a lot of, yeah, and a lot of the vice versa. A lot of people that start off getting snakes from me end up trying a crested gecko at some point. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, we have a lot of people buy their first carpet, you know, from us after they've already bought several geckos. And that and ball pythons, too, that's kind of been the next thing we've been really working on. And I'm seeing a lot with those, too. A lot of my crested gecko customers are getting their first snake, you know, the first ball python.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to see. And I'll notice it, too, when, you know, a customer that I'm used to shipping them geckos, and then all of a sudden there's a snake in there. It's like, oh. But, yeah.
Double check.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I have to double check. And, wow, okay. Keep them away from the geckos. But, yeah.
Otherwise, only one of them is going to get there and give you the gecko. So.
Yeah, it's going to be an expensive meal, yeah.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
But yeah. But yeah, just a lot of geckos. I still got tokays, a lot of tokay morphs. I actually still have all the tokays I've ever had. I don't sell them. I just stockpile them, I guess. yeah, they're taking up like 15 feet of space, and yeah, I don't think I've made any money because I haven't hardly sold anything. But yeah, I got those going. I've got some Transpacus rat snakes that I keep getting too busy and not bothering trying to breed them. they're just fun to have. They're neat snakes.
They're very
good. Yeah, got those. I've always liked those too. Mm-hmm. Boas. I found out I can breed boas now that nobody wants them. So.
Isn't that
but, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I produced Hypo Arabesques this year, and those would have been worth like $2,500 back when I bought the parents. And
right.
Now they're like, I think I have them up for $250.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
They're cool, though. But, yeah, I mean, I've got a pretty varied collection for sure. Carpet collection's actually bigger than it, I think bigger than it's ever been as far as adults go. But yeah, I'm starting to have to get really picky about what projects I keep and which ones I work into other projects and, you know, stuff like that, because it's carpets. They produce a lot of babies, and you really don't have to have, you know, huge numbers of carpets to produce enough babies to keep you busy.
Right.
So.
That is true.
For sure. They're definitely not a ball python. I mean, that's one thing I think a lot of people that come in from ball pythons and get into carpets, they don't think about the fact that you could end up with 18 babies, you know, out of a clutch. So getting a couple hundred snakes will make you realize it, though. You get a couple
you learn pretty quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to hit on some, let's go through some husbandry and some breeding stuff that we're going to go. And some just some basic husbandry of what you do. And in particular, I know one time you were on Reptile Radio and you were saying that you are keeping your carpets cooler. And I noticed that a lot of people are saying that, including myself now. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's a couple of parts to that. I mean, one thing, like, this time of year, I have a hard time keeping the facility, you know. I like to keep it at 80 degrees ambient temperature.
Mm-hmm.
This time of year, I have a hard time doing that. I've got to really run my heaters hard, and that dries the air out, just the same as if you're running an air conditioner in the summer. And I think if we don't have the heat tape on quite so hot in their cages, and we don't try to crank the heaters up to 80 degrees, let it dip into the mid-70s or even lower at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that prevents a lot of you know, the air getting so dry, because I don't know, I keep hygrometers in every room, and I kind of keep an eye on the humidity this time of year. And it gets down, you know, 30%, and it's hard to get it up to even 50 right now. You know, 50 is about as much as I want in the room anyway, but yeah, I have a real hard time. So I think keeping them cooler actually helps with the humidity issue a little bit. And another thing, if you watch snakes, most of the time, you know, carpets, ball pythons, stuff like that, most of the time they like to be in the low 80s, you know, low 80s, high 70s. They're not really going to sit on the heat tape.
Right.
Unless they're digesting a meal. So,
right.
Yeah, I talked to, I forget who it was I was talking to. Oh, it was Tracy Barker was saying they don't even have heat tape on their baby ball pythons. They just keep them in a room. Yeah, they keep them in a room at like 82, 83 degrees on a shelf.
Huh.
And they seem to do fine just at a uniform temperature. So, yeah, I think there's a lot going on in the hobby with people trying different things. And, especially, not to jump ahead, but, you know, a lot of people aren't cooling their pythons now. Just letting the seasonal change in the room, just a few degrees difference, I think the snakes really pick up on.
Right.
Right.
But it's kind of interesting just how much things have changed just in the last 10 or 12 years since the hobby's really, blown up on the internet.
Right.
Because the hobby's just gotten exponentially larger since, 99, 2000 is when it really, really started to boom on the internet. Now,
right.
It's interesting that, you know, the different things people are trying and sharing, able to share with each other now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. This is my first year trying without cooling, and so far we're doing well. So, yeah, I can definitely attest to that. So.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what, you know, and it kept happening every year. I'd always, Erie and Jai's always go first for me. And,
me too.
Yeah, and I would notice, you know, it was like, I wasn't even done cooling them yet. I had males going off feed and females that you could just, after a while, if you read your snakes, they'll tell you what's going on, and females especially. And I had girls that would, I mean, literally start to swell up like they were about to ovulate, and I'd have to throw a male in on them. And, you know, and then I started talking to people, and they're saying, yeah, we're not cooling anything anymore. And so I just went ahead and tried it, because it was like, yeah, I knew it wasn't going to stop the Erie and Jaya's, because they, you know, a lot of times I'd have to anyway, you know, before it was supposedly going to be time. So, that's been a big... That's nice, not having to go through and plug timers into everything. I mean, honestly, I like that part of it. But, now we just basically, for breeding, I'm just keeping the snakes just like I always do. And if I want females to get ready to go, if I'm getting ready to start introducing males, I'll just feed them heavier. Okay. And that seems to help, too.
Okay.
You know, really hammering them with food before you want them to go, and that in the presence of a male.
Do you feed consistently through the year, or are you
No, okay. Not the adults. They get a couple of times a year. I won't feed them for 2 or 3 months. Basically, in the summer, the only adults that I feed are the females. After they lay eggs, I get them fat again.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm introducing males so often, it's hard to go through and feed anyway. And I like to focus on keep breeding, keep running males to the girls that haven't gone yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm spending a lot of time with babies, obviously.
Right.
Getting those started. And so really throughout the warmest months of the year, I'm really concentrating on breeding and starting babies. And then, And, you know, I mean, the girls that haven't bred and the males, I mean, the males, I'll feed them if they start to look a little bit thin, I'll go ahead and pull them aside for a week and feed them two or three rats and get them fattened back up and then put them in. Mm-hmm. My males, they generally will eat all season, and maybe it might be because I don't offer them food all the time, but, you know, it seems to work, so...
Do you find that, I was going to hit on this and I forgot about this, but I noticed that when this past year I sort of cycled my feeding, you know, I'd go some time where I didn't feed and then I would feed, and I had no problem with any of my snakes switching from rats or mice to rats. Have you found the same?
Yeah, I mean, with switching from mice to rats, we get both, and... basically, what I'll do, if they start getting to the point where they're really too big to eat mice, I'll go ahead and then I'll start worrying about it. But other than that, I mean, I really don't try too hard, because usually what ends up happening is I'll try a rat, and they usually will just take it. But
right.
if I do have one that is just really stubborn, I'll try, like, one mouse at a time and then offer a rat that same night.
Mm-hmm.
And only give them one mouse each time, but keep the metabolism up. Keep, you know, make sure you do give them that one mouse.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I have seen, you know, when I'm not feeding stuff and then I start to feed again, I can get them to take a rat without even batting an eye. So it really, there's a couple of ways you can trick them, you know, into eating that first rat, but... Mm. But, yeah, I really don't have that much trouble with it. Jungles, I know, can be, and I know I don't do a lot of jungles, so,
uh-huh.
You know, as you're probably saying, speak for yourself. But, yeah, with Erie and Jives and Coastals and Diamond Jungle and stuff like that, I haven't had that much trouble.
Yeah, even with my, like, I noticed before when, you know, when I first got into snakes, I was feeding, you know, every week, that type of scenario, and
right.
I had trouble with, you know, switching from getting to take a rat or getting to take frozen thawed, and, you know, as my collection got older, I sort of backed off of feeding a bit, and I noticed that I never have a problem ever with eating, ever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and at about a year is when I start playing with their feeding schedules. For the first, if they're this year's babies, which I still consider the 11s,
uh-huh.
this year's babies until next year, you know, until we get 2012s on the ground. But basically, up until I start hatching stuff now, I'm going to feed, you know, the stuff from last year. I hit them pretty consistently every week.
Okay.
And usually at about a year old, I'll start kind of toying with their feeding schedule, because that's when they seem to start getting picky and maybe not wanting to eat every time. Same with ball pythons, really.
Right.
But for the first year, I hammer them pretty hard to make sure, you know, they're growing and going in the right direction. And then, yeah, you can, you know, if you want to go on vacation for 2 weeks, you can do that with carpet. So.
Yeah.
Now, do you start on rats? Because I usually start my hatchings off on rat pinkies just to – so they never see a mouse, so there's no transition problems later on.
Yeah, I used to, and I still do with
yeah.
some of them if they're bigger carpets. But
yeah.
the reason I try to vary it up, honestly, even with the ones that will start on rats, because with rat pinkies, they seem to have really soft stools. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's probably something to do with not as much calcium, you know, they don't have, the bone structure is not as dense, and there's no hair. Nude mice, I would have thought would do the same thing, but I've gotten some nude mice, just frozen hairless mice, adult ones though,
uh-huh.
and they don't have soft stools with those, so I don't think it's necessarily the lack of fur, but for whatever reason, yeah, I have that issue with the rat pinkies, and that's why I usually, even if they are taking rat pinks, I'll flip mice in there every maybe third week or so. And there have been some studies that snakes grow a little bit faster with mice rather than small, like rat pinkies and rat pups. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. That's actually what I do. I don't feed pinks. I feed mice. And that's why.
I try to get them on to the larger forms of rat as quick as possible, because I know that the pinks don't really have too much, mostly water or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure their bellies are full of milk too, so
yeah.
That might have something to, that could have something to do with it, you know.
Yeah.
Not exactly a scientific discussion, but I'm throwing darts. Yeah. I'm like, maybe that's it. But yeah, I don't know. I just, and like I said, I just don't have that much trouble switching them, so it's really, I haven't
just kinda go with it,
gotten into it the last couple of years. Yeah, mice have seemed to work really well. But yeah, I mean, it just,
if it's eaten, go. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and I mean, if you can't get mice, or, you know, if you can't get mice on a regular basis, then do yourself a favor and start them on rats. But yeah, I mean, it all depends on what you have. But I typically don't hear anything from customers either having too much trouble. So.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Do you guys find that you would, because I've never really sold snakes yet, so this is my first season, but do you find that that your customers are more geared to buy an animal if it started on rats because of that sort of info that's out there that says that they're hard to switch?
I have.
Yeah, I mean, I see it. Oh, man, maybe one out of every 20 carpets I sell.
Yeah.
Somebody will ask that. And I'll check for them. And usually what I'll do is I'll just tell them, hey, if you really want it, let me switch it for you. I'll make sure I'll get it to eat five mice in a row. And I'm not going to do one a week. We'll do a couple a week for 2 weeks or whatever. And just to make sure. And I've done that for several people, too. But, I mean, it's not real common to have that. Most people don't care.
Right. Okay.
And a lot of times customers will tell me they're going to feed rats, and I'll tell them what's going on, that they're still on mice, and they buy them anyway. And I've had several tell me that they took a rat the first try. So not every carpet needs to be switched either. You know, that's the thing, especially coastals. Coastals eat anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Garbage disposal.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
so
yeah.
Let's talk about some breeding. I mean, we started to hit on it a little bit, but just basically walk us through like what you're doing as far as breeding, and from beginning to end.
No beginning, no end, because we're not cooling. So basically, I just like I mean, actually. I just got a ball python clutch not too long ago. Carpets, I don't think they're going to be quite as spread out as the ball pythons, but and that might be because I cooled a lot of my stuff for so long that a lot of these females are kind of on that old schedule, and they still go the same time of year as they used to. But really what I do, I just start with who I think is ready, you know, and it's always the Urian Jaya's first, and I'll start rotating males in with them, and then usually March, April, I'll start putting the coastals together and the jungles and diamond jungles and all that stuff. But get my Erie and Jayas going right now. And basically, I'll just start introducing a male, and then I'll watch, you know, come back and check later that night or the next day, make sure I get a copulation, which usually if your male won't copulate with your female, it's her. She's not ready yet. And, you know, follicles aren't big enough or whatever, and she just needs a little bit longer. And what I've found is a lot of times running multiple males in her cage might not get the males more interested, but it'll get her, you know, it'll start to get her going, and then the pheromones, you know, the males pick up on that. And
I noticed that too, so...
Yeah, so sometimes, you know, running a couple of different males, then you've got to really watch it, especially with carpets, because selective breeding is such a big issue. You want to know who the daddy is, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, basically I just start running the male, you know, starting with who I think's ready and who's the most important female that he gets, you know, that he gets grabbed. And just kind of do it that way, and you know, as they become gravid, check them off, you know, check them off the list, they're done.
Okay.
And you just you start rotating them. Let's say if I started with five females that I wanted this year, Son of Bullwinkle. Let's say I started with five Erie and Jaya females, figuring he's probably going to get about three of them.
Okay.
You know, I'd start with my biggest and best and, you know, get that one done and then move on. But, I mean, you can rotate them. You only leave them in for, you know, 2, 3, 4 days max. I know some people only leave them in overnight. But
okay.
All right. But, yeah, and usually a couple of trips through the cage, through one female's cage, will do it. I mean, two or three,
right,
for copulating, and then you can usually tell pretty quick after that.
Right.
Okay.
So as far as your eggs, what are you how are you setting them up? Are you doing artificial incubation or maternal?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, I've never tried maternal.
I'm not the only one.
Never tried it. I just set them up like I always have. I put the perlite down in the box and then just saturate it completely with water and then put a couple of layers of that light diffuser stuff, the grid, the plastic white grid.
Yes, yes, that's what I
said. Set that on top and just put the eggs on that so they're not touching the substrate. And stick them in the incubator and look in there in about a month, and then look in there again in another month, and I should have babies. Yeah, it's pretty easy.
Little heads poking out, you're good, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you cutting the eggs?
Not anymore. Not until one tips. I used to.
Yes.
And I think that's still on my website, but... Basically, I'll wait until one tips, and then I cut them all open, but I don't go around fishing in there like I used to.
Okay.
And, I mean, sometimes stuff happens, and, yeah, that's fine, but I've got so many other things going on that usually just leave them alone is a good thing, too.
Sure.
You don't have stuff that you're screwing with all the time that comes out of the egg, you know, a day early, and it doesn't end up absorbing its yolk, and... Now you've got something that you're trying to feed crested gecko tails to because it weighs 10 grams. And, yeah, I quit messing with them. But
they
tend to do okay, you know. And I let one tip, and then I'll go ahead and split the rest of the eggs, which I just do it with my fingers. I don't even use a razor blade or anything like that.
Rip
the
shell.
Yep, just rip a little bit open so I know they can make it out. Yeah, usually I get 100% hatch rate that way.
Nice.
You've
had some weird stuff come out of eggs, though, on your website.
I had that one Nick put in the book, the snake that was eating itself.
Eating itself, that's my favorite one. So
yeah.
It's just like, oh, I mean, I would be like, and now I got to deal with this coming out of the egg. And then, of course, you got the two-headed one a while ago at some point. So.
Yeah, which, I bought a
that was
car
cool
with
too.
Money from that.
Yeah.
That was the same year. I had the one that had swallowed its tail and then the two-headed one. Yeah, it was weird. that one, I should have taken a picture after I pulled its tail out of its throat.
Yeah.
It was all discolored where it started to digest.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
The scales were all discolored. It shed out, the first shed. But, yeah, it was like it was white almost. It was really weird.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird.
So, yeah, that two-headed one, that freaked me out.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that at all. I was digging through a pile of baby carpets, and all of a sudden I pulled one body, and I had one of them try to bite me, and the other head's going the other way, and I'm like, whoa, no.
Oh, no.
What is this?
Whoa, no.
I dropped them and stepped back and, like, looked at them for a second.
It's like, no, that's really what's happening here.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
God.
Okay.
Yeah, one of them tried to bite, and the other one tried to take off, and the one that tried to bite won.
So what do you have going on this season? Anything cool? Anything
High contrast Queensland Tigers, really the best two that came out of the pairings that me and Dave Prada did. I last year, speaking of snakes that to start to ovulate on their own. Last year, she just started to go, and so I decided to go ahead, and she was tiny. And I went ahead and put the male on her anyway at the last minute, and I got, like, 7 eggs, and I think 3 of them were good, and I got, and like, 4 slugs. And out of the 3 that were good, only one had veins, or the 3 that looked good, only one had veins. So I ended up hatching 1 baby, and I've got it. Of course, it's a male, which I don't need.
Right.
But it is a little bit nicer than both of the parents as far as the striping. Both of the parents are really yellow, though.
Right.
So, yeah, they're kind of a butter yellow, a lot like that picture of my original Balin tiger. But they've held their yellow a lot longer. They're adults now. That Balin tiger, he was yellow until he hit about, 5.5 feet, and then he kind of took on an ivory color.
Okay.
But, I'm real excited about that pairing. Hopefully I'll get him in early enough, and which I know I will, but get him in there early enough, and she should produce a pretty decent-sized clutch this year, because
awesome.
She went right back on feed as soon as she laid last year. So that's going on. I got that weird blue Syrian Jaya jaguar that came out of those, the kind of silver-looking Syrian Jaya that I produced back, I think that was 2004 when I produced the first one of those. But, that's kind of weird. That was something I just kind of put on the back burner and didn't really pay much attention to. And then one of the jags out of that clutch turned kind of, her saddles turned blue. Kind of a powdery blue color, so that's fun to play with. I don't know what's going on, if it's a selectively bred kind of thing or if there's some kind of genetics at work or what's going on there, but
awesome.
Neat to play with. What else do I have going on? What's that?
I was just looking at a picture of that that snake, the Irian, the jag.
She's
cool snake.
She's got, like, even in the yellow part of the pattern, that blue is, like, trying to bleed through, like, in blotches, like, down towards her tail. Yeah, she's really, really neat-looking snake.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell anything different about her. She looked like a pretty traditional, nice yellow and kind of orange in the saddles when she was young. And really, it wasn't until she hit 5.5 feet maybe that she started to get that color. I produced a clutch of those last year with one of the Irian Jayas, a pure 100% Irian Jaya male with that same color thing going on.
Oh, cool.
And so I've got that clutch growing out. And there's some interesting jags. There's one little male jag in particular that he's patterned more like a black-headed python or a Woma, like the
really?
Dark pattern. Yeah, the dark pattern. I think he is on my Facebook. Let me see if I can find a picture. I'll post it on the Maelia Python's radio guest thing.
Nice. Yeah, I knew that would come in handy. So
I'll do it on the fly. I'll do it while we're talking. But
multi-headed.
Yeah, he's wild looking. And he's starting, not in this picture. This picture is a couple months old, but he's actually starting to get some of the blue already down on his sides. And he's tiny. I mean, he's not even a year old yet. So
it's just kind of like you're thinking that if this isn't genetic, you're thinking they're just going to end up blind breeding to get just some blue animals coming out, kind of like.
Either way, that's what I think.
Yeah,
either way,
I mean, get.
You know, I mean, perp, it's actually, you know, as far as selective breeding goes, I mean, it can be done.
Yeah.
I mean, look at jungles now compared to the stuff that they find in the wild in Australia.
They don't look look nothing alike. So,
right.
No. Yeah, so blind breeding to get some blue animals, that's kind of cool. I'd be all for that. are you keeping back full clutches? Is what you kind of sound like you had full clutch back.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to do with those, I'll be selling some eventually, but I don't think they're all going to, like, because the mom, she didn't show the blue until she was pretty much ready to breed. So I obviously, I don't want to raise them all to that size. So
yeah,
I'm going to have to pick.
Have that.
I'm going to have to pick a few, but like this one male, his pattern's so different that he's got to, there's got to be something going on. He's already showing the blue, so.
Cool on him,
so
yeah.
He's a definite keeper. And then the rest of the females are the Jags in that clutch are female. I just sold one other male out of that clutch. I sold to a real good customer of mine. But yeah, the rest of them that I have are female, so.
That works.
Cool.
Let's see. I'm about ready to post that picture.
Cool.
There we go.
Look at us multitasking, doing stuff.
Very cool.
So, let's see here. Here he goes.
All right, I'm going to rush over to that Facebook page right now. I want to see it.
Here it is. But, yeah, his pattern, and this is before the blue started kicking in down on his sides, but, yeah.
Whoa.
He's got like a, yeah. He's
wow. That's nuts. That's some heavy, that's a really cool pattern.
Yeah, weird. It came in blotches awesome. Like that, and now it's still like that. That orange has started to fade out and kind of go a grayish blue color. So
that's cool.
Yeah,
that
I don't know what's
cool.
going on.
Oh
yeah,
wow!
I have no idea what's going on with that one, but it's staying. That's what I do know. So, awesome.
Yep.
That is crazy looking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he's going to end up with mom's color, so that's going to be neat.
Cool.
It almost reminds me of a little bit of like a calico ball python type of look. Like,
oh, yeah, where it's
kind
of shattered and blocky. Yeah, and
cool.
He's a jerk. He's ornery.
Always the pretty ones.
That whole, you know, this whole line actually is just a spinoff of the Bullwinkle line. This is Bullwinkle's mom is where this originated.
Okay.
Speaking
blue
speaking
stuff
of him,
what's that?
Speaking of Bullwinkle, can you mind giving us a little bit of a backstory on him when you get a chance?
Yeah, I had this old ugly wild-caught female with scars all over her back. She was like one of the first Aryan Jayas brought in, I guess. And
oh, my God.
She was mean, but I had her, and I bred the original GQ male to her in 2004 and produced a weird-looking silver baby, but everybody said, we don't know what it is, or, you know. You know how it goes on the internet. Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about it. You know, I was like, whatever. I just kept her. And the next year, I bred my original male jaguar from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Bred him to that female Aryan Jaya because I had seen somebody in Europe had done it. And the Aryan Jaya jags were really reduced patterns, so I figured I'd give it a shot. And that was the very first Aryan Jaya Jag breeding, I think, in the country.
Wow.
And but anyway, yeah, Bullwinkle came out of that along with, I think it was like a clutch of six eggs, six or seven. It wasn't very many. And but I got Bullwinkle and two other ones. And
cool.
Yeah, and he was the only male jag in that clutch. So that's where it all started. And then when I bred him to the GQ female, that's when it really... The 75%ers are when they really started looking good.
So the blue issue came all the way from...
What's that?
The blue issue kind of came all the way from Bullwinkle's mother to kind of come in and show up a little bit of generations later.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if people were seeing it out of some of Bullwinkle's offspring, but I don't know. Because, see, that female jag that's showing the blue, she was actually out of a out of one of, I guess it would have been one of Bullwinkle's half-siblings. It was a pure Eurangia out of that original, that old wild-caught female.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, or that snake didn't look like it had that blue thing going on at all. And usually you
right.
can tell on Eurangias because they have that silvery look. I don't know what, how that's coming through other than then we're still seeing it, and now it's showing up on the Jags, and yeah, now I better start paying attention. So.
Now it's just a weird color, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, whatever it is, I've got enough of them, and I've produced enough of them that I produce more of those silver superior angias that have, that kind of take on a bluish tint on their sides. I produced more of those in 2006. I think
mm-hmm.
three of them came out of that clutch, and there are pictures of those on my website.
Nice.
Yeah, but yeah, they look really different. The Jags are the ones that, so far, I don't think really tell from just a regular one in the clutch. So I don't know. We'll see.
Huh.
But yeah, it'll be fun to play with.
Awesome. Now, some of the other ones you got going on over there, your caramel type line. Can you give some more
yep.
info about that?
Yep. I tried breeding the male, one of her male tri-stripe or tiger. I don't quite know what happened with him. He looked like a tri-stripe, but the dad was a tiger. So.
Okay.
Whatever I call him, it'll offend somebody, but he looked like a tri-stripe to me.
Right.
But anyway, I tried breeding him to her last year, and more than half the clutch went south. I think I hatched like 3 out of 18 or 19 eggs, and they were all nice and dark. They didn't look anything like the ones I've produced before, never, or much less any of them look like any kind of super. So I got to try that again this year and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm wanting to see if there's a super. I don't know. What was I going to say? Oh, the red / hypo, the diamond jungle ones that I'm
yeah.
working with. Those.
Yeah.
Now that I've seen more of the European line caramels, honestly, I think they remind me more of those than the ones that Nico told me were caramels. The caramel line that I have that I'm still trying to prove out. But yeah, I don't know. That one to me, it lightens everything up, and it seems like that one, there would have to be a super because it's just so night and day, you know, between the ones that have it and the ones that don't. But, yeah, with this caramel line that I've been messing with for, I don't know, what's it been, 5 years now, I think? It's like 06 or 07 Daytona when I picked up that female. But, yeah, still haven't actually bred two together and got a decent clutch, so hopefully this season. And she's
yeah.
nice and flat now, so.
Yeah, there's
I can prove that out.
I'm looking at the pictures of your red hypo diamond jungles on your site, and they're pretty cool. There's some.
The one I posted a picture of one of those with a regular jaguar with it from the
yeah.
same clutch. On your Facebook and. Yeah, and that's a male. I was needing a male. The year before, I only got one, and it was a female. Well, I got more than one jag, but only one had the red color.
Right.
And it was a female. She looks good, too. I just posted her on my Facebook tonight.
Okay.
She's like a year, or a 2010, so she's a year older. But, yeah, she's turning out really nice.
Wow, the variation between the two is insane.
Yeah, and it's... Pretty much that's how it is when they come out, you know, they're either red or black. And the ones that are red, you know, it's more of a orangey kind of rusty red color is what it is. But the ones that are that color don't have any black pigment at all when they hatch. And then they get it as they get a little bit older. This jag, though, and that's the thing with the jags, they don't seem to get as much dark pigment. And this little guy in particular, I think he's going to... he's going to keep a lot of that orangish red color as an adult. So,
very cool. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's cool. But the it says here that you're working with NGs that are.
Oh yeah.
You're working with the same that are in the UK line, or are these different?
No. No, these came from a snake that I picked up from someone here in the States, and it's the only one. I only had that one female, and I couldn't really find a male that I wanted to breed to her, so I actually bred bull ankle to her the first time. And that was a really wild-looking clutch. And then I bred one of those back to her, one of the males. The one I call Yahoo, he's got the big Y on his head. But anyway, yeah, and then that's the clutch I had in, what was that, 2010. And those were really wild. I've got one from that clutch that I'm growing out now, and I'll probably, I'm probably going to breed him back to one of his Jaguar, the NG Jaguar, like his sister. I guess that's what it would be. Yeah. Hope no gecko people are listening to this. But talking about breeding siblings together. But yeah, the and I may breed him back to mom too, I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
See, now we've just done worse than just siblings, so
yeah.
And I really hope they're not listening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, they don't want to know what F3 means now. but that's where we're going with it. And I don't know, man. They keep coming out stripy, and the siblings are, you know, the non-Jaguars, they're even striped, and it's like, I don't know where all that's coming from. But, yeah, and then the Jags are just really, really reduced. So it's almost like what you'd think a Super Jaguar would have looked like, you know, if there would have been a viable Super Jag that was even more extreme. So that's why I like them. I don't really care what they are. I've heard people say they think New Guinea or NG, you know, New Guineas are from Queensland, and it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. I don't, you know.
Yeah, we could be here for a while if we start this debate.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the first thing I did is breed them into Erie and Diajag, so whatever they were, it's ruined anyway as far as that goes.
Gone now.
I fixed that, yeah.
Now they're just a cool snake. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that snake is cool. I'm assuming this is the same one I'm looking at the pics on your site of. Sort of has like red highlights along the black, and the tail is different than the rest.
Kind of an ivory colored jag. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the New Guinea one. The
right. Yeah. And he's kind of like a off white in the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the three dots on his head.
I got to tell you, man, your site is, like, top-notch.
It is. It always has been.
I've always been impressed with your website.
I thought that's what I was going to do for a living.
That's very cool.
Thank you.
All right, let's see. All right, let's get into some Erie and Jaias because, you know, when I think of Erie and Jaias, I think of the stuff that you have going on, and I think sometimes they don't get the love they deserve. And, you know, what do you have going on as far as IJOs this year?
Well, I mean, obviously the GQ line, that's always, always doing stuff with those. I've been breeding the Hannibals in, you know, the Hannibal line stuff into the GQs, and those are really neat. I'm producing some really nice stuff. Still got the original GQ pair. I'll probably go ahead and try and pair those two up this year. They're 10 years old now. So.
Oh, wow.
They're a little over 10 years old.
Time flies.
Yeah. So, yeah, probably won't breed. I don't know yet. I have to decide. I don't know if I'm going to put Son of Bullwinkle on her and get some more Jags or what I'm going to do yet. But got that going on. Really just several examples of those. I've got several Hannibal by GQ line females that should go for the first time this year.
For those of us that may not know, what give us a little story on Hannibal.
Hannibal, I got him with, I had to buy like, I think it was 5 adult carpets from somebody to get this one male that I wanted, and that was the male I wanted, was Hannibal. An Aryan Jaya, I mean, I've shown pictures of him to Dave Barker, and Dave confirmed it, you know, it's very, you know, very typical Aryan Jaya, but he's just, his pattern's off, it's really reduced, and he's got no black. And we thought for sure that would be recessive. I mean, Dave Barker said that, and that's kind of what I thought. And then the first clutch I got out of him, I bred him to a female from Yasser, Spitfire reptiles. Got a little clutch, and they came out all stripey and weird. Those are the ones we were just tentatively calling Motleys. That ended up just a fluke, total fluke. I don't know what I did in the incubator, but something
came out good.
Yeah, because I did that pairing again a few years later, and no dice. They looked totally different. I don't know what that was. But anyway, I've bred Hannibal to one of his daughters, and I've bred 2 of the Hannibal offspring back to each other, actually from 2 different females, or from 2 different mothers. So they were half siblings that I bred together. And I think out of both of those clutches, I hatched like 6 eggs so far. So I'm not doing too great on the odds. I've had bad hatchery and a lot of so far. So hopefully this year I'll have something, and I'll have a full clutch of them to look at. Of the ones I hatched, there was one that I thought might have been what Hannibal was, and it ended up wouldn't eat, and it died. Go figure.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Hopefully I'll get something this year, though. I've got plenty of females that are Hannibal offspring now. So I think there's at least 3 or maybe even 4 or 5 that should go this year. So.
Cool.
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay. What about the, just maybe you can hit a little bit on the story of the GQ line.
That was the first carpets I bought. I was at a Herp Society, Kansas City Herp Society, at their fall show. And I decided I was going to get some carpets. And I was kind of thinking jungles, but the Aryan Jayas were pretty new on the scene, and I was kind of interested in those two. And didn't see much in the way of jungles at that show, but there were a couple different vendors had Aryan Jayas, but the ones that stood out to me, because they didn't have as much dark pigment and dark pattern as the other ones, were the original GQ pair. They were sitting on Gary Quirk's table, that's where the name comes from, and ended up, what happened, I picked my 2 out of the last 4 that he had. The rest of the clutch died in shipping somewhere. The 2 that were left ended up selling later at that show, and I believe, last I heard, one of them died like right after the guy got them. And I don't know whatever happened to the other odd one. I don't know what sex it was or whatever, but yeah, I don't know that there's very many of that bloodline out there that didn't actually start from the pair that I got.
Wow.
Yeah, because that was, I believe the imports came, because the parents were wild caught. I believe they came, one of them came from Tom Widener Habitat Systems, and the other one came through Bob Clark.
Okay.
I remember them. So, kind of neat backstory on them. And, they were really nice looking, and adding that line to the Erie, or to the Jaguars, has just been really good and a good thing.
Yeah. It pairs well, nice, with Michael Pinnell's line of Aryan Jayas as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's, I remember the first time I saw Mike's, Michael Pinnell's Irians, I thought the same thing. I was like, wow. Because you just really, especially back then, almost every Irian Jaya you saw was mostly black and cream in color, and, you know, just a little bit of orange down at the bottom of the saddle.
Okay. Cool. Okay, do you have anything, you know, that anything else that you're working on as far as Irian Jayas? Any?
No, I mean, just the Irian Jaya Jags. I think I'm going to hold off on trying for the 90, whatever they are, 93 or thereabouts.
Right.
Percentage. I, the male 87.5% that I have is not quite as big as I want him to be. Mm-hmm. And, I'm just going to hold off. I'm not in a big hurry. It's more about selective breeding than it is what percentage they are anyway. So I'm going to do 87.5 again for the third year in a row. And then, hopefully get myself another holdback or two out of those. Those have been coming out really nice.
Yes.
The SOB by GQ. I think I'm going to do SOB by maybe a GQ by Hannibal line female this year. See what we get.
Cool.
But yeah, and the Hannibal line, I've been breeding those in the, now that I've got so many of those because I raised up a ton of females. I've been kind of breeding them into everything, breed them into the GQ line, you know, still pure Irian Jayas, and then also the Irian Jaya Jaguars.
Right. Okay. What about,
yep.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I said yep.
Oh, okay. I was going to hit on some tigers.
Yes. Sorry,
two things.
I love tigers.
two things. I wanted your thoughts on what's going on with the tiger. And I have Wilbird Citrus Tigers, and his founder male came from you, which is a pairing you did with Dave Prada, and you touched on earlier with the HCQs. Is there any, can you just give me maybe some, I don't know, give me some background history on that? How did that come about? I know that the tiger that you had came from Jason Balin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what about
that? Balin Tiger bred to Dave's female,
okay.
The high contrast
mm-hmm.
queen. I did that pairing twice, and the first pairing, I believe, is where Will's male came from.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. But yeah, those, and I've got a pair of those snakes. Now they're adults. The female is the one that went last year, and it was a little too soon for her.
Right.
Hopefully we'll get a good clutch. But the one baby I did get, it's really, really nice. He's small, but a lot of striping. And I think it's going to be a good clutch. I think as far as pattern goes, I think we'll see more like, you know, what we would consider a super tiger.
Okay.
But, yeah, that first generation, because the female, she wasn't, you know, obviously the high-contrast Queensland female wasn't striped. So, you know, some of the striping was broken up and whatnot on those. I've seen a lot of those passed around with broken striping, and people say they're tiger siblings. And I really don't think that's what they are. I think they're just tigers with breaks in the stripes. But,
Right.
But, yeah. I don't know, but we'll see. Yeah, hopefully she'll produce a decent clutch for me this year. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to kind of selectively breeding that line now because I think, you know, for being coastals or Queenslands, they're gonna be really, really yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, Will Citrus Tigers look nice, too. They've got a bit more like an orange color, I think,
yeah,
in the dark part of the pattern.
Yes. I love them.
Yeah.
You got like what?
Really
6.6?
Yeah. 6.6 of them, yeah. So,
how many?
Oh my God, I was correct.
I have 6.6 of those citrus tigers, yeah.
Damn. Yeah. I thought I was making up a number.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on what's going on with the tiger?
Genetically?
Yeah.
Really? No. I think basically what I've been saying the whole time. You know, it's genetic, but so are what we think of as a normal pattern. That's genetic too. And, you know, it's kind of like when, you know, I mean, and I said that before, you know, like with ball pythons, there's really only one kind of normal, or what they consider normal. With carpets, you've got stuff with bands, you've got stuff with broken striping, you've got stuff kind of in between. I mean, there's just so many different patterns that are considered normal. You know, you've got Irian Jayas, they have, you know, saddles that don't usually connect at the back. I mean, you've got all these different things, and I think it's real easy to interfere with that tiger gene. And whatever that gene is responsible for that striping, I think it's real easily influenced by even, you know, what you would consider a normal gene. I mean, look what the tiger jags. A lot of time what you're fighting is those crossbars that connect the stripes that go, you know, from front to back on the snake and in the pattern.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think people are in, I guess if you you look at it that way, you could call it polygenic, because if certain genes are missing, then it looks like what people would consider a tiger. So, yeah, I guess there is another gene at play, but I just don't think it's how most people generally think of it. A lot of people, I think, are under the impression that if it's a quote-unquote normal carpet, there's no genetics there. And, but, you know, you see that with, like, super striped ball pythons. You breed spider into that, and all of a sudden the striping is all broken up, you know, but it's still got the super stripe genetics behind it. But anyway, I mean, that's the best I can explain it, really. I just think, I think it's not something you're going to be able to, you know, breed into a diamond jungle and then, you know, two generations later, you've got super tigers that are, you know, half diamond jungle or whatever. You know, it's not quite that easy. I think it's going to take some selective breeding to make sure you're getting that pattern that's fighting with the tiger stripes. You've got to get that out, too. You've got to breed that out.
Right.
Giving in line.
So basically,
if you're breeding it to an animal that may not be striped, then you're going to get offspring that may have a broken stripe, and you would hold that back and breed it back to maybe the striped one, and then you're going to refine the stripe until you get more of a solid stripe.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're effectively breeding the other pattern out. And, it's one of those deals where a project like that to change the color of a tiger is going to take some work. I mean, and it's cool that you see guys like Will doing the citrus tigers, trying to add some orange in there, stuff like that. I've thought about doing diamond jungle tigers and never, well, I wouldn't say never. I did it in 06. I tried and they weren't that great, you know, what came out. So.
Right.
Right. You need multiple generations to get what you think is a diamond jungle tiger, so...
Yeah. See, like, with coastals, the striping seems to breed pretty easily into them. I mean, like, the red phase, I've done red phase tigers now a couple times and get that super last year that looked like a super tiger.
Right.
Yep.
So...
I guess it's just I've noticed that even, like, banded coastals will throw striped animals, so I guess it's just kind of there. So.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing. One of the red phase lines that I've bred into the tigers is literally banded. There are bands, distinct bands going around this snake, and you wouldn't have thought in a million years she would throw tiger offspring, and she did.
There it is.
Yeah, she did, and then I bred, well, one of them was actually a striped jag, but I bred one of those to a red tiger out of the same female, and last year I got that snake that's basically a red super tiger. I also got a couple of red tigers and a red jag out of her, too. So that was a neat little clutch.
Nice.
But, you just have to play around with the tigers. I mean, sometimes they'll surprise you. Not always just looking at another snake's pattern is going to tell you what it's going to do. Sometimes you just need to try it and see.
Right.
Cool.
So, I know, Anthony, that you, you're working with some inland pythons, and I guess first is the congratulations on being the first to hatch out inland in the United States.
Thanks. Yeah, they hatched the Carey's place, but I'll take credit.
No. Okay, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
not here,
so it's
all
that. Yours. So.
Yeah, there you go.
So how are they to work with?
They're mellow. They have really thick necks, which always strikes everybody because compared to another carpet the same size, it's weird. They have what seems like a thicker neck, and they just, they're a stockier build. But they're really mellow. They're kind of the same attitude as a brettle, just a totally different color.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they're real mellow as far, you know, I don't think I've ever been bitten by one. Yeah, even the babies. Pretty laid back. It's funny though, you know. This year, or last year, when Carrie sent the babies, I was, you know, figuring because they were all real tiny and they weren't nippy, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be fun getting these things baby. And none of them gave me any trouble at all. They all ate on the first time, and he had gotten them started, gotten a couple meals into all of them. But I figured shipping them across the country and all that. They took right off, man.
Wow.
And they're all doing great. They're starting to get that kind of that bluish gray color that everybody likes.
I was about to ask, which ones were you getting? I know there's like two different colors floating around out there, the bluish gray or the kind of like the normal looking one. So I guess you kind of got the bluish gray one.
Yeah, I think they all kind of have that bluish gray tint, but some of them do have a little bit of a, like, they kind of get browned out.
Yeah.
Especially on the dorsal surface, it seems like.
Okay.
But, and then you'll also see some where in the black part of the pattern, they'll actually take on, like, a rusty orangish-red color.
Wow.
Ours don't really show that quite as much, that rusty orange. I know Carrie picked up a couple from the same line that do show it. So I think it's going to be one of those things like with Arian Jaya's where you're going to get some variation, you know, in your clutches. But, that's a pretty typical look for them too, is with more of that orangey-red color in the black. But I think that's the direction people, when they start selectively breeding them, it's going to kind of be like jungles where some people are breeding for tipping and some people are breeding for solid yellow and black. I think you're going to have that with inlands. You're going to have some people that want to see that red in the black part of the pattern, and then you're also going to have people that just want a real clean grayish blue color, you know, with black, contrasting black pattern. So
we'll start seeing a split between a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I think you just start to see people, you know, taking what they have and running in, you know, in different directions and.
Right.
And, you know, even with the same bloodlines, you know, you give people some brettles or inlands or whatever from the same line and give them long enough. Look at Nick Mutton's brettles compared to a lot of what's out there. And, you know, we know they're all from one of two bloodlines, you know, the brettles here. So I think you're going to see...
Cool.
With the inlands, once they become more mainstream, more people have them, I think you'll start seeing some projects like that. You know, where people are doing different things. And somebody's going to end up bringing jags into them eventually, and I can't wait to see what they look like. But I'm not going to be the first one to do it.
But I can't wait.
Yeah.
What do you think is in store for the inland kind of market-wise? Do you think the kind of takeoff is in everybody will kind of need a pair eventually or just kind of...
With carpets, $1,000 snakes sell easily. I mean, not easily, but you can sell them. If they look good and they're rare enough or whatever, you can sell $1,000 carpets. I think recent history has kind of shown us there's a pretty limited market for $4,000 and $5,000 carpet pythons. And these, you know, beings that you have to buy a pair of them, you know, I think the well, right now we're asking $4,000 a pair on them. Back
right.
when we got them, they were six out of Europe. Is what they were going for. I think, you know, and that was the first year. That was, what was that, 06 when we brought those in. Yeah, I mean, I think the ones that, like, we're not going to see too many produced over the next 3 or 4 years. So I think what people are able to produce here in the United States, I think they'll be able to sell them. Probably, you know, this year if somebody hatches them, they'll probably, you know, $3,500
right.
a pair. Something
yeah.
like that, grand. I don't know. I mean, the ones we have, I haven't really tried to sell them yet. I've run some ads on Kingsnake, and really that's about it. Throw up an iPhone picture of them on Facebook whenever I think about it when I'm in the snake room. But now that they're starting to get some color and get a little size to them, I'm going to take some good pictures and post them on the website for sale. But
excellent.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, with like I was saying, $1,000 for a carpet, people will buy them. And even in pairs, I think they'll be really popular. So I think once they get to that range, they'll hold for a while, kind of like the Gretels did.
Okay.
And then what was that with the Gretels? Was it somebody sold a bunch of them and it freaked everybody out? Whatever that was. I remember they went from $1,500
oh, yeah,
a pair
was,
to
–
Yeah.
The 300 a pair, like overnight, because there were like hundreds of them dumped on the market. But hopefully that won't happen with N1s, which I don't see how it could, because there's just not that many of them around, not
right.
yet. But
so, you think that the other morphs of N1 will start cropping up? Because I know, like in the book, there was the salt and pepper N1. Think that'll eventually
pop
up somewhere
cool.
in here.
I mean. It's you never know. I mean, if the genetics are there, they're there, and we'll find them. I mean, the odds, like, of getting an albino in whatever is, like, what, 1 in 20,000, I think, is what they say in reptiles. I think I've produced more than that in crested geckos and haven't hit that albino yet, you know. So, like, I think it's just, you know, if they're there, I mean, that 1 in 20,000, that's your odds, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen. So, I mean, with the N1s, the small gene pool that's out there, so if there's something, you know, if there's a gene in there, I'm sure we'll find it, you know,
right.
real quick. I think that's a totally different line because the ones we have are from Paul Harris. And I think Terry at Black Hills might have a different line of N1s.
Yeah,
maybe
so.
Unrelated. Wooter, is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
I think his are, that's a different line. I think that's what Terry has. So, I mean, we've got a couple of lines of N1s. So, who knows? I mean, that. Where are those, what are they called, the N1s, the speckled ones?
Salt and pepper.
Oh, the, no,
salt and
there's
pepper,
a,
no, sorry.
No, there's another one. There's, it was up on Morelia Pythons a while back.
Yeah, I think those are in Europe, aren't they?
Yeah, they're in Europe. I can't remember.
Wow.
Yeah, see that, those I really can't wait to hear what's going on.
Yeah.
Those will be neat.
Yeah,
the N1s, man, that's been like, that's just been a personal, just something I wanted for a long time. So it's kind of cool to be able to be there at the beginning, you know, and see where all this stuff's coming from and get to take part in it.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Too bad I killed my male. Well, I didn't kill him, but he died. So
Gary's
doing the breeding, and I get to mess with the babies for a while until I can get a male grown back out. But,
terrible.
Yeah, good to have friends that went in on or that go in on projects with you.
You hear that, Owen?
Yeah, I know. I heard it. Okay, you got how many animals over me? And, you know,
maybe we should have
my first,
Midland.
Yeah, I just got my first zebra, and I'm like, yeah. You're like, I have eight. Shut up, Owen. So I mean, like, you know.
Hey, I got my first zebra. What, last year, I guess.
Oh yeah, so. I'm loving it so far. So my foray into jungles is working out. Haven't died yet, so
mine. I'm chomping at the bit to get him bred into some diamond jungles. So
you will go with these. Now eat, darn it, and come on. So,
yep.
Yep. All right, so now, Anthony, for a guy like me who kind of does this part-time, you know, my snake business and I got my full-time job.
Right.
Coming from you, who do this full-time, what are your thoughts on the current market for carpet pythons?
Carpets are my hobby. That's my official answer. No, they, like I said, $1,000 carpets they sell. You know, $1,000, $500. That's a good, you can sell those. You can sell a lot of them. If you're looking at stuff like, even looking at zebras, I mean, I didn't buy it so I could make more zebras. I bought it so I could do zebra jags and diamond zebra jags, you know, diamond jungle, whatever. And, of course, I want to make bright yellow super
something.
Zebras, too.
Yeah.
You know, pure jungle. Yeah.
We burn your eyes out. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, luckily, that's not like the jaguar where you're just stuck. Now, I will say jaguars are probably my favorite carpet mutation, period, just because I always liked reduced pattern carpets. So when they came out with one that was co-dominant, that was perfect for me. You know, because now you can really play and change the color of them and, you know, breed them into different stuff and all that. But, yeah, with that's where I think it is with carpets, you know, making something unique, making, you know, selectively breeding stuff, getting something and making more of it and trying to turn a profit before the price bombs. Yeah, I mean, you can make money doing stuff like that, but you can also buy $30,000 for the zebras and not make your money back in 3 or 4 years either. I mean, you know,
right.
It just kind of depends on, you got to look at everything, look at, you know, do your homework and find out what, you know, figure out what you plan to produce, when you think you'll produce them, you know, and realistically look at what you think you'll be able to sell them for, you know.
Right.
And, but no, I mean, I paid, what did we pay, like $6,000 for my first pair of Jags. I went in on those with a friend, but, they were $3,000 a piece. I don't think I may have actually sold some striped jaguars for $3,000. But typically, if I look at a $3,000 snake, I'm thinking, you know, either I'm going to make more of them and they're going to be a lot less money per snake, but I'm going to produce several of them. And, I mean, that's like a clutch of jags now. If they're $500 a piece and you get 10 jags in a clutch, that's a good clutch, man.
That's a great clutch.
$5,000, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not high dollar ball pythons, but when you've got 10 of them to sell, it makes up for it. But anyway, you know, it's either that or you got to be looking at it and going, okay, what am I going to combine it with? If you want to make, you know, if you want to make $3,000 snakes, you need to be looking at, you know, what you're going to breed your $3,000 snake to. You know, that you're going to, you know, if it's a zebra, you're going to want to breed it to a caramel jag or a jag or, you know, a really nice diamond jungle jaguar or something like that, you know, keep moving forward.
Right.
Because that's what I always tell people, and it doesn't matter what, you know, crested geckos, carpet pythons, whatever, but good-looking stuff always sells. If it's just a little bit better looking than what people are used to seeing, that helps, you know.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter how rare. But yeah, I mean, that's really, for me, I'm not trying to hit home runs with the carpets. You know, I know guys that have bought snakes and made 10 times their money back the following year, but usually for every one of those stories you hear, there's quite a few where the people are disappointed and they didn't do as well as they thought they would or whatever too. So that
right.
you've got to have, it all depends on how many people are looking at your snakes too.
Right.
You know, that's, the market is very relative to how many people know you're out there. You know, I mean, like my website, it gets, I haven't looked in a while, but you know, anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 unique visitors a month. Just in the United States, I don't even know worldwide, like I don't really look at those stats, but, you know, that's a lot of people looking at my stuff. And it only takes, you know, if you've got a unique snake that you put up for sale, not everybody has to agree with the price, just enough people to buy them, you know. And so that's where I think it's important to remember that, you know, do your advertising, get your name out there.
Yep.
And if you stick with a project, you'll make money on it, you know. But that's why I always tell people to, you know, always stick with what you like. Don't try to get into what you think is going to be hot because you think you'll make money on it, because those, you get bored.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's no passion. Transpicuous rat snakes sitting there for 5 years now. I haven't tried to breed them yet. But, yeah. So, no, I mean, I didn't think I was going to make money on those, but that's just, you know, it's one of those things that I got them, but I wasn't really that into them, I guess, because
right.
Kind of got bored before they were ever big enough to breed. And then when they were, I just, yeah, whatever. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, the market, it's always a good discussion. But, yeah, I mean, as far as carpets go, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Selective breeding is going to be a better way to look at it, you know, as far as that goes. Even with the morphs, that's the cool thing about it. You've got the selective breeding of chondros and the morphs of ball pythons kind of combined.
Right.
Because you can really see aspects of carpets, stuff you can do with carpets that you can't do with ball python morphs.
Yeah.
You can't breed them into a different subspecies and make them a different color, you know.
Right.
That is true.
So, you know.
I mean, I think it's a crime. I'm at the snake show today, and I paid, you know, $1,300 for my first jag, and she was no bigger than a little worm with teeth when I got her, and I got people trying to get me to part with my babies for like $150. I'm like, no, come on. Come on,
mate, here. Yeah, and I mean, people are used to seeing that, They see it, though, and then that price sticks. But that's the thing. I mean, that's what the Jaguar genes probably work now. It's what else is in there, you know? Is it selectively bred? You know, is it, what do the parents look like? That kind of thing. That's what's cool about it. It's kind of like, I don't know if you guys have ever looked at the emerald tree boa market, but
yes.
It's pretty much, yeah, I mean, like, especially the basins, they get really, really, like, into the tens of thousands of dollars for some of the basins and, you know, the Amazon basin emeralds. And you never see them for sale. People buy them, but it's all selective breeding. I mean, there's not really any morphs or mutations. It's just all about selective breeding, and they've done a lot. You know, they've done a whole lot with those things. They've got all the white down the backs of some of those.
That is true, yeah.
But, and that's really what, you know, I look at the carpets like that first, and then, yeah, there's morphs you can combine into this stuff, too. And that's why I can't wait, like, with the breeding the zebra into the Python Pete line Diamond Jungle Jags that I have. You know, everybody, you know, there's been some zebra Jags, but not this color.
No.
So you can refine it. Yeah. So that's always good. You can always take it a step further by refining it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's more interesting to me, you know, is the potential of what these things can look like.
Yeah. I think in the coming years, you're going to see a lot of the carpet pythons really getting kicked up a notch for that reason, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And jungles is where we really saw it first. I mean, now you can get really good and high quality jungles for, you know, $200-$300 as babies. But once they hit, you know, a year or two old and they start showing yellow, some of those snakes will bring $1,000. Another good example of what you can do with the market, you know, with the right bloodline. But you've really seen it with jungles. I mean, what used to be considered awesome is now a fairly average jungle. And, you know, I remember back, like, when I was in high school, I wanted a jungle. They were $300, and they turned into kind of brownish gold and black adults, usually, you know.
Right.
And But yeah, now there's been a lot done. I think you're starting to see it with the laryngitis and a lot of other stuff too.
Yep.
But yeah. Neat. That's the nice thing about it. You're not, you know, at least with selectively bred projects, you're not. It's not like the space race on the, you know, the morphs with the ball pythons where, you know, a four or five gene snake is what you have to do to to compete now. It's you can kind of take your time a little bit with the carpets.
Yeah.
So. Nice. Now, do you see a little bit more interest kind of being gathered in the carpet python market because of all the new morphs as well as just the refined and good-looking normals we're going to be getting?
Over the last 10 years or so, I mean, there's definitely more people interested in carpets. I see... Seems like back then there were carpet people, and then there were just people that weren't into it at all and didn't really get it. Now I'm seeing more and more, you know, I'll talk to a guy about a ball python or whatever. Like, that's, I've been buying a lot of ball pythons the last few years. And, you know, and they'll ask me about laryngitis jags or something like that. And yeah, I've been kind of tinkering with them, too, and it's like it surprises me. More and more people that... I don't know them from the carpet pythons, but, you know, I'll talk to them. And, yeah, I've got a few. You know, you hear that now. You hear people branching out a little bit into it. But, yeah, I mean, as far as over the last 10 years, yeah, I've seen a lot more of that. And it's increasingly, you know, more and more now. But I don't know if it's necessarily the morphs or just these people are going to shows and they're seeing these stunning bright yellow, you know, older carpets that people put on display sometimes, if that, you know, that does it to them and that's what gets them into it. I don't know if it's that, you know, if they see a really good example or if it's that they see, yeah, I'm sure it's different for a lot of people, but, you know, or if it's the fact that they see that there are albinos out there and zebras and azanthics and caramels and jaguars and all this other stuff. But, yeah, I think... they're going to have a broader appeal because of the morphs, for sure. Like, people will see the, you know, investment potential there. And yeah, I mean, especially ball python guys have started to notice tinkering more and more, you know.
Cool.
Cool.
So, yeah.
So, are there any morphs that you're, like, currently after trying to find or pushing
ahead? I want some pure Darwins. So it means I need, like, you know, an albino male and maybe some het females or something like that. But I don't know. I'll probably wait another couple of years. I don't need to be the first or tenth guy on the block with them. I just want to have them, you know, just because. And then I'll play with them from there. But I'm not, you know, I'm not, like, necessarily dying to have them. I am starting to tinker with the zebras. I think that's going to be fun when I can start getting into, like, high percentage diamond super zebras and stuff like that.
People
turn them white and neon yellow and stuff like that.
That would be
very interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of, the zebra is kind of the one I'm playing with, the new one I'm playing with right now. But it'll get bred into some of the other stuff. Like the red/hypo ones that I haven't named yet.
Right.
I'll breed. That'll get bred into zebras too.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I guess if you could have any type of Morelia in your collection, it would be the Darwins.
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Nope.
If I could have any kind of Morelia, probably. It's either going to be between the Owen Pellies and the Ruffies, rough scales.
Yes. Okay.
If I were, like, picking right now, I'd probably pick the Owen Pellies just because I know where I can get the Ruffies. I wouldn't turn those down. But, you know, the next Morelia I'll probably get as far as another Morelia species would be rough scales.
Okay.
And I will get some of those. You guarantee
I want
them
so bad. That's my Achilles right now. I gotta have a pair of those at some point.
Yep. So yeah, I remember seeing him on TV and thinking, that's cool. We'll probably never be able to have him, you know, just never even dawned on me.
Yeah,
and less than a decade later.
What about if you could have any non-Moralia species in your collection? What would it be?
Honestly, the rough scale is like my big one, right? That's what I want as far as species go. I mean, other than that, I like the selective breeding aspect of all of this. So, like, I'm happy with the ball python collection I have and the crested gecko collection and the carpets and all the other stuff that I mess with. I mean, I've pretty much got what I want as far as that goes. But, yeah, the rough scale is probably the... like my big target right now, stuff that I can actually have.
Right.
But yeah. I'd like to have some basins too eventually, but they're a lot of money.
Yeah.
It'll take a long time to raise up. It's like, I don't know, I'm going to have to play around with stuff that I can make money with for a while before I'll let myself have a $6,000 pair of pets.
Right.
Have you thought about branching off more into the geckos, like into Lichianus and things like that? Or are you happy with your cresties and that's where you're going to stay?
Nah, I'd probably stay with the cresteds and gargoyles. I wouldn't mind getting into, some of the Chihuahua and the Saracenorum. Lychees, commercially, like as far as a business thing, I don't think lychees are or Chihuahua for that matter, are a great investment because they're not nearly as prolific as the cresteds, but as far as like hobby-wise, I wish I had some more space and we didn't have 1,000 crested gecko cages in that room. We need more all the time. When I do get myself a piece of land and actually build my own facility from scratch, it'll be big enough, and I'd like to have a little room with stuff like that. And I've already got some stuff like that. I've got the mourning geckos, and they're found in New Caledonia, but they're also found in other places. But, yeah, any of that stuff, any of those geckos that don't need heat, they're a lot easier to keep than most lizards, and I kind of like all of them. But yeah, the Saracenorum, I don't know why I don't have more of those. I could set those up just like crested geckos and gargoyles and they'd be fine, but they're kind of neat. They're just subtle, but there are actually some different patterns of those. Saracenorums, we've got the white collared ones, the ones with the stripes and stuff. I'd like to get some of those too. So
I did have some work with mossy leaf tails. So
that.
I did do some work with some mossy leaf tail geckos. So they are fun to play with. But
cool.
Yeah. Now I'll stick with my carpet pythons next. So
it's best to learn one thing before you dive into something else. I know I've started several projects at the same time before, and it's kind of fun trying to run back and forth between projects, figuring out what's going on, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, stuff like that. Usually if you can just try to concentrate on learning one thing at a time, and then once you've got the carpets going and you're breeding them consistently every year for a few years, then maybe start trying to learn something else. But good to have variety.
Yep.
I know there's some days that the ball pythons will get me to go into work, and other days it's the crested geckos, and other days it's the carpet pythons, and it seems like there's always something I'm genuinely interested to see the next day,
Cool. What do you have any recommendations for people getting into carpet pythons?
Don't try to keep like full clutches when you produce 200 babies sometime in one season. And
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, probably, I mean, other than, you know, obviously do your homework, learn what you're doing, you know, talk to people, listen to more than one person, because it's a little bit different for everybody. I think a lot of times it depends on where you live and the type of setup, you know, if they're in your basement or your spare bedroom upstairs, things can be different. So,
sure.
You know, keep an open mind. There's no right or wrong way to do anything. But yeah, just figure out what works for you. And when you do start producing stuff, don't try to keep everything. But I've seen people do the exact opposite, and they sell everything, and they don't keep enough back, and then a snake gets sick, and you've got a long, you know, you got to start all over again, you know.
Right.
If you lose a snake, so it's, you know, you've got to keep it a happy medium between holding enough back so that you're covered and you make sure your project's secure, but you need to also, you know, keep in mind what you can care for and what you can afford to feed and things like that. And also, you know, I've seen people dump a whole bunch of money in all at once, and then nobody's ever heard of them. They have all this cool stuff, but nobody really knows them, and so they have a hard time selling it, and they produce way too much. And I mean, I saw a little bit of that just when I got into leopard geckos. People knew who I was, but not that many people knew to come to me for leopard geckos, and so I had a hard time. You know, we went from producing 300 or 400 one year to producing 2,500 the next year, and it's like, what do we do with 2,500 leopard geckos when nobody knows we really have them yet? You know, it's kind of a rough deal, and they're not cheap to feed. But yeah, I mean, and the same thing with the carpets. You know, you got to be careful. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that really is the biggest thing. I mean, as far as that goes, and start with quality stock. You know, it's a lot cheaper to just plunk down an extra couple $100 now and get what you want, rather than try to correct it late, you know, correct for buying marginal stock, you know, in the beginning, because you'll be dealing with that for years if you really stick with your project.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
You know, but I mean, if somebody's just buying their first carpet, there's nothing wrong with buying $150 or $300 whatever Jaguar. You know, something that isn't super, super fancy. You know, if you just want to see how you like the species, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, typically, you know, a lot of times I'll have people that'll start a little cheaper, make sure they like the species, and then they dive in.
And then they dive in, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Usually it's getting that first one that gets them interested, and then they start looking on the internet, seeing what all's out there, and pretty soon they get another and another.
That's pretty much my story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they're like potato chips.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. I was just going to say, we've been keeping some of our adults in racks now too, so that's helping with the number situation. They don't necessarily have to have a big cage, but yeah, that is another consideration too. If you're keeping them in cages, you can't have as many carpets as you do ball pythons, because it's just housing
them in a rack.
Housing adult carpets can be expensive compared to other pythons. So,
are you using like a 41 quart tub, or what are you using as far as
it's
rack?
Similar. It's similar as far as the layout goes, but it's actually a 60 quart, which is closer to 3 feet, and it's about 18 inches wide, something like that. I had Mark at Animal Plastics make them for me custom, the racks.
Okay.
And honestly, they work really well for anything 7.5 feet and smaller. Anything that big, I've got a couple of Freedom Breeder racks with the 27 by 33 tubs. Those are good for slightly bigger stuff. And then I've still got some of those Animal Plastics cages, the 3 foot by 2 foot, and they're, I believe Yeah, they're 15 inches high, I believe, which sounds short, but it's actually, that's really a good height. Any taller than that, you start having issues with humidity and stuff in the winter, and it seems like 15 inches is good. 15, 16 inches, something like that.
Okay, cool. Well, we're about to run out of time, so if anybody wanted to get in touch with you, Anthony, how do they do that?
Email is best, and then if somebody places an order, everybody gets my phone number, my cell phone, but usually email is best because I have a hard time remembering who I talk to and who I tell what, and if I have emails to go back and look at, I can actually remember what they're asking me about, so... Yeah, my website's acreptiles.com. There's a contact form on there. I'm also on Facebook, so.
Okay.
On there quite a bit, too.
And you also have a YouTube page, right?
Oh, I do. I haven't added any videos in a while, though. Those cartoons take too long to make, and... Actually, the iPhone videos, I need to do more of those. People like those, I think, even better than the stupid cartoons, and they only take a few minutes. So, yeah, actually, when I get going breeding season-wise, stuff starts swelling up. That's usually when I start getting excited and wanting to show everybody. So.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm sure we'll be doing some more of those this season.
We look forward to seeing it. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on?
I think we covered it all. Man, I can't believe it's been 2 hours. I looked at it and I'm like, man, that's a long show. And then I remembered back to my other, like the Reptile Radio interviews, and it always flew by, so I figured that'd be the case tonight.
Yeah. I know that everybody always thinks the same thing. They say, oh my God, 2 hours. And, you know, you're talking snakes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Second.
Look at me.
You would
I mean,
be surprised.
I don't even work anymore because I decided I wanted to do this all the time. So, yeah, I mean, and I spend a lot more time picking up snake poop than I do talking about snakes. So this has been a good, it's been a relief to actually be able to talk about it.
Cool.
So.
Well, we enjoyed having you on, and thanks for
coming. Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me.
In the future. So.
Yeah,
you gotta check back when you get some cool stuff, and you can taunt me about the roughies and stuff like that you're probably going to get before
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
So.
The roughies, I don't know. That might be a while.
Right.
But, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That was good.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely have to do it again, maybe after 10 or so clutches hit the ground this year, we'll have some good stuff to talk about. So.
Yeah,
that'd
be awesome.
Well, I love it.
All right. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot,
Anthony. And
have a good night, all right?
All right, you too.
All right, see you, Anthony. All right.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, Owen, another awesome show.
Check.
they seem to be flowing pretty good as of late. So I was glad that you were back on the show because I hate flying solo. So
you can't do anything without me. It's okay.
Yeah.
So.
Our banter back and forth is what makes it entertaining as well as educational.
Because that's what we try. We try to make this a well-rounded show.
That's correct.
So, right. Yeah. This marks the end of the very long day for me. So,
nice.
What do we got going on with the? So, what are the shout-outs and stuff like that going on?
Yeah, let me just run down them real quick again.
Go for it.
Yeah, the Carpet Fest info, check it out over on the Facebook page. If you're interested in coming, make sure you shoot us an email at MoreliaPythonRadio@gmail.com. The Morelia Pick of the Week, I'm going to say let's go with Coastals this week. What do you think?
Greg.
Okay.
I'm good at that one. So.
All right.
I'm going to try to win.
So we're looking for your best Coastals for this week coming up. Post them up. Coastal picks. You know, anything you got. Selective breeding. What's going on? Show us what you got.
Yep, Eric will have a pick, and I will have a pick that we'll talk about next show. So.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes.
Morelia Python Radio at Facebook. Check us out. Like us on that. If you have any guest suggestions or a question, make sure you email us at MoreliaPythonRadio@gmail.com. The Morelia Python Forum. There was no chat there, so I don't know what's going
yeah,
on. With
you guys are lacking. So,
I don't know what happened, but there's no. You can't even click on a chat, so I don't know if something happened over there or not.
Don't worry. I will stir them up. Once they get them fired up, that chat room will be filled. A bunch of people just bashing me, but it's okay. It'll be filled. So.
I like it, Owen.
Yeah.
I want to thank Anthony for coming on and go over and check out AC Reptiles. If you are interested in some carpet pythons, he has some cool stuff over there. I want to give a shout out to David Means. He's the VP. Now I have all the info together here. It's Saves, and that's Saving All Virginia Exotic Species. You can go check him out at wesaves.com. There's a donate button that you can click on. It's from $1 up to $100, and they're just basically their mission is to protect the rights of Virginia residents who responsibly keep exotic species and to promote responsible exotic animal ownership and to educate the public. So he's involved with that, and I give him kudos for stepping up and actually doing something. So I want to make sure that I always give a shout out to him. And then next week,
if you can donate it, it'll go for. If you can donate, it will be to a good cause and will go a long way. So definitely, if you can, all good.
Yep. And then of course, make sure you check out US ARC as well. Make sure you donate to them or join up, become a member. And the only other thing I have is the guest next week is Mike Curtin. From Scattershot Exotics. He has some pretty cool projects going on. I look forward to talking with him. And then on Tuesday, the 6th of March at 7 o'clock, we're going to have Will Bird on. So
right. Look
forward to that one as well.
Grill him about those citrus tigers you love so much.
Yeah.
So, yes.
He has some pretty cool jungle stuff going on as well because that's kind of what he wants to talk about. And I don't know if you've seen pictures of it, but...
I
some
like
pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, check out EB Morelia at Facebook and click the like button and Rogue Reptiles as well. And it's all yours, Owen. Go ahead.
You can check us out at rogue-reptiles.com. We will be perusing. We have a show coming up in March. That's the big show in Reading. It'll be a 3-day expo. It's going to be huge. So there's not only reptiles, but it's like a horse and pet expo with it. So we will be there, and we will have many babies, and by Sunday I will probably be dead. So definitely come out and check it out. And Rogue Reptiles, we've got babies coming soon. So
okay,
keep a watch. All right?
Okay.
All right, that does it for me. I'm pretty much going to collapse right here and sleep for a few hours. So everybody, wish everyone a good night. Eric, I will talk to you later, and I'll see everyone next week.
Okay.
All right, good night.
Have a good night.